I'll be reading from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 23, verse 44 through 46. It was now about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, while the sun's light failed, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And having said this, he breathed his last.
It's good to see you this morning. Our lesson today will come from the 19th chapter of the Gospel of John. If you want to turn there, it's too long for us to read in one reading, so we'll be referring to passages as we go through them. The trial and crucifixion of Jesus was the darkest moment in the history of the world. It's when, for all the wrong reasons, man did a really despicable thing. For because of greed and because of pride and because of selfishness and because of anger and because of lust, all of the reasons that we sin, all of the sins that we commit, all came into focus there on that day. And as we look at this drama unfold in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and then references to it in the rest of the New Testament, we see that no one came out of it looking very good. The friends of Jesus abandoned him. His enemies stopped at nothing to accomplish what they wanted. And those who were bystanders, they either looked the other way or in their own way participated in this great thing. Only Jesus stayed true to his calling, true to his work, true to his mission. Only Jesus never varied, stayed on subject, and kept marching towards this sacrifice that must be made. One character that is described in John to a great length is Pilate. Pilate shouldn't even been involved in the whole thing, but he is, and there he is. And unlike Caiaphas, who was a person who was willing to do anything to get what he wanted, and that was to stay in power, and to keep the temple system going as it was. He even said, if this man doesn't die, we'll lose our place. And not like Peter, whose day was bad because even though he loved Jesus, his fear overtook his loyalty and his faith, and he played the coward that day. But Pilate was a modern man. He was a practical man. He would be what you would call pragmatic. He knew he had a lot of authority, but he liked to make deals and he liked to make compromises, and he thought that he could handle the situation. And his thoughts of spiritual things was only fleeting in this chapter. We'd actually want to start with like verse 28 of chapter 18, when Jesus is taken from Caiaphas' house to Pilate. In verse 28, it says, "And they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the praetorium, and it was early. They themselves did not enter the praetorium, so that they might eat, not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. So Pilate went out to them and said, 'What accusation do you bring against this man?'" We see from the very beginning that Pilate was a fellow who handled everything kind of loosely. Mostly what he wanted to do was get through the day and accomplish the task that he had with the least amount of investment on his part. The Jews would not enter the place where the Gentiles lived, since it was such a holy day coming up and contact with the Gentiles could defile them. Since we're not talking about them, we just say this in passing. This showed how really deep their contempt was, that they were wanting to make sure we'd maintain our cleanliness, that we don't touch a Gentile, but we can kill the Son of God. It's interesting. But we're talking about Pilate, so let's go back here to him. So if they won't come in, Pilate could have demanded they come in or go home, but instead he goes out. He knew how to make compromises. He was a complete political person. And we see him as he goes out to them. This actually sets the stage for the rest of this chapter 18 and 19, where we'll see physically Pilate going in and out of his office or his courtroom, out to the Jews, back in. And his physical actions sort of play as a cue for the indecisions and for the poor decisions that he made. The Jews won't enter, so Pilate goes out. He sees that they don't really want a real trial. He sees that they wanted Jesus dead and they wanted the Roman government to put their stamp of approval on it. So he tells them in verse 31, take him yourself. Take him yourself. And then the Bible tells us he entered into the praetorium. He comes from where he's talking to them. He goes in to have this conversation with Jesus in verse 33. In this case, he finds that there's no crime really committed. It was some kind of a problem with their theology, and that wasn't his concern. So he goes back out in verse 38 and tells them no crime has been committed. He thinks he's got it all figured out because he knows that these men, they've made a stand. They've had this Jewish trial they've had, and now they've kind of overreached, and they're from his point of view, they're out beyond what they're able to do, and something has to happen. So he reminds them of a custom. If you use the custom, then that would mean that they wouldn't really lose face. I mean, after all, this was the law. We would like to have killed him, but we couldn't, and that sort of thing. He thinks he's figured this all out. Practical people do that all the time. Pragmatic people and political people think that it's all about the deal. It's not about what we do. He goes out and he says, you know, we have a custom that every year at this time, we release someone. And he suggested they release Jesus in verse 39. The people cry out, no, they don't want Jesus. And they show just how utter their contempt is for him. They call for Barabbas, a known criminal. So in chapter 19, verse 1, Pilate goes back in. He took Jesus and he beat him. It said he scourged him. And this is where they use the cat of nine tails. It's a whip that's not braided all the way to the end. And those extra straps have things like pieces of metal and pieces of bone or pieces of pottery and sewed into the end of them. So that there's little sharp hooks that when you hit the guy, you not only hit him, you also tear him up. This this method of torture was so horrible and so awful that most people didn't live through it. Pilate already knows that Jesus has done nothing worthy of death, nothing worthy of a trial even. No crime has been committed. And yet he's willing to go to this length and to commit this kind of a savagery on him. This attitude of not having any care for what's right carries over into his underlings, because they not only beat him, but they mock him and they dress him up and they put thorns on his head and they play with him. The fact that Pilate was willing to do this shows that he really had no concern about right and wrong. This was just some way to get this settled so we can go on with the rest of what we've got to do. In verse 4, he goes back out again, in and out. Do you ever have a little child that goes in and out of the house, in and out? What do you usually say to them? Make up your mind, don't you? Either stay in or stay out, but quit this. Jesus also wants us to make up our mind. He tells the people in Laodicea that they're just like Pilate. They just kind of go with the flow of the room temperature and are warm. And because they're not hot or cold, they're in the worst shape they could be in. You'd want to feel sorry for Pilate if he just didn't do so much damage to people. And we see him as he goes back out, and he tells them, I have beat him. And he shows them to him, coming out there in his robe with the blood all over him, with the crown of thorns, and he mocks him, and he says, behold the man. He says, here's what you're making such a big deal about. Look at this guy. He committed no crime, but I went ahead and beat him. They began to cry in verse 6, crucify him, crucify him. He is amazed at this statement. And in verse 7, he asks them, why do they want to crucify him? Can't they handle this himself? And then they tell him that he claims to be the Son of God. Now we add fear to Pilate's situation. He's very afraid of this whole situation. They called him a king, and now they call him God. And Pilate's a political man. He's not a theologian, and he doesn't know these things. So he goes back in verse 9, and he asks Jesus, where do you come from? What's your origin? Jesus refuses to answer. Pilate puffs up and says, don't you remember I have all this power? I can, verse 10, I can take your life or I can spare your life. And Jesus removes that plank from his board that he's standing on, his platform, by telling him that you have no power except what God has given to you. You're not really in charge of this whole thing. And he tells him of sin. And the sin that you're committing is great, but it's not as great as some of the others, since you like to play the odds and that sort of thing. In verse 12, we see him go out again and seeks to release him. Remember, he has the whole Roman army behind him. He could have just said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. But they don't. He seeks to release him. In verse 13, he brings Jesus back out. Verse 14 puts in a little verse here that tells us something important, because it said at this very moment, on this very day, all of the lambs are being killed and prepared for the feast of the Passover. So while the lambs are being prepared for the Old Testament Passover, the Lamb of God is being prepared for the sacrifice for the world. It's noontime. He tries to appease the crowd again by bringing Jesus back out and showing him off. He said, behold your king. They said, we have no king but Caesar. And then he handed him over to be crucified. Jesus knew who he was and what he had to do. He stayed on course. The Jews knew who they were and what they wanted to do. They wanted to stay in power. Peter knew who he was. He was a coward. He's out weeping bitterly. But poor Pilate. Pilate thinks he's an important person. Pilate thinks there's no situation he can't control. He can't manage. Pilate thinks that a good deal is a good deal, and you have to give up something to get something. And he thinks that you practically and that you can do that in your life. Poor Pilate. At the end, he finally makes a stand when he puts the sign above Jesus at his crucifixion that said he's the king of the Jews. The Jews said, don't say he's the king of Jews. Say he said he was the king of the Jews. And on that final little point, Pilate swells up and said, I've said what I'm going to say, and it's over. Pilate is written in here for our learning. Some of us are like Peter. We know better than we do, and we're afraid. We're afraid of the consequences. Fear always casts out our faith. It's the enemy of our faith. I doubt there's anybody here that's like Caiaphas, that whatever's right or wrong doesn't matter. I'm going to stay in charge. But a lot of us, are like Pilate. We think we can negotiate our way through things. We think we can be practical and make deals. We think that if everybody's happy, then we must be right. Poor Pilate. This day was the darkest day in the history of the world, but from God's point of view, it was the greatest day, because it was the day when the Lamb of God died so that we could live. It was the day when life was given to us. It was the day when the righteousness of God and the holiness of God and the wrath of God towards sin and His great forgiveness all came into focus. So it was a bright day from heaven's side. But from here it was dark. It was the day that Peter will never forget. It's a day when Caiaphas will grieve because his day is over and his place is removed. But it was a dark day for Pilate and for those like him. I don't know what decisions you have to make this week. Don't be Pilate. I don't know what opportunities we have to stand for right and truth and kindness and love. Don't be Pilate. The practical man always becomes an evil man because practicality is not the name of the game. It's faith is the name of the game and obedience. Don't be Pilate. If you have been, this is the time to make it right. Won't you come to Jesus while we stand and sing?